Hi, everyone. I'm Stephanie, a mom to a Mito fighter. On our podcast, Energy in Action, we talk all things Mito, and I'm glad you're here to learn and to be part of our community. Welcome back to this week's episode of Energy in Action. I'm your host, Stephanie, and thank you for joining us. Today's guests are from an organization many of you are familiar with. We are speaking with the Every Life Foundation. Joining me from Every Life is Claire Ellis and Dylan Simone. Every Life is dedicated to empowering the rare disease patient community to advocate for impactful, science-driven legislation and policy that advances the equitable development of treatments, cures, and life-saving diagnoses. So on today's episode, we're going to be discussing the importance of the Newborn Screening Saves Lives Reauthorization Act. Now, I know you're wondering, what does this have to do with Mito? Plenty. Many rare disease patients are found via the newborn screening process. The full panel right now contains 35 tests, and those tests include an FAOD diagnosis. So I'd like to welcome Dylan and Claire. Welcome, Dylan and Claire, to the Energy in Action podcast. I'm really excited to have you with us today. Let's just get to it. Let's talk about the Newborn Screening Reauthorization Act and how we can get our Mito community involved.
Great. Thanks so much, and thanks for having us here today. With the Newborn Screening Reauthorization Bill, it's currently stuck in the Senate. And so it did pass unanimously out of the House earlier this year, or last session. It passed about a 200 vote margin this session. But unfortunately, it's stuck in the Senate. So I'd say the top line is how to get involved is reach out and contact your senators about the importance of this legislation to you and your community. The reason that it's currently stalled is that there is a proposed amendment that would require informed consent to be used for dry blood spots for research purposes. And so that's separate from the actual newborn screening. But the reason that we oppose that proposed amendment is because that would severely harm newborn screening related research. So it's important to know that these are de-identified biospecimen and therefore do not require informed consent under current HHS rules. And this research is hugely important for conditions not yet on newborn screening, as well as conditions currently part of state panels. So I'll start with the easier one in terms of ones that are currently on state panels. These dry blood spots help for quality assurance. So let's make sure that the machines are working the way that we're supposed to, and that we are properly identifying the babies with or without the condition. The second part is for conditions not yet on the RUSP. And so it helps there because you need samples to develop new diagnostic methods. You need samples to develop new therapeutics. And so by completely shutting down this avenue, you essentially be stalling out newborn screening research for years until the hospitals and healthcare system could properly sort out how to properly implement informed consent. And so those are objections to the proposed amendment. And again, going back to what I said at the top, the best way to get involved is to reach out to your senators and let them know that you support the Newborn Screening Reauthorization Saves Lives Act as currently written, and that you would love to see it pass and the importance to your community. And because it's always good to have the numbers for those who are keeping track, the reauthorization is Senate Bill 350 or S-350. And so that's just the easiest way to let your staffers know what the bill is. So we'll start there with reauthorization and happy to answer any questions around that.
One question I have, is there a link on your website that they can easily find to maybe find a template or some type of letter that they can personalize and send off to their senator?
Yes. Claire will talk a little bit more about this in a little bit in terms of we just revamped our action center, which we're really excited about. And so we'll walk you guys through a little bit of that. But within that action center, there are action alerts that you can use to send to your representative, to your senators in their office, as well as some walkthroughs on how to write a letter to the editor to your local newspaper. Those are two great ways to get involved because as a former Senate intern, I can tell you, we look at the local papers. And so that was a big part of my morning. Every morning was kind of sorting through the healthcare news within the local papers to the center I worked for. And so that's a great way to get involved and to make sure that your voice is being heard in addition to the action alerts.
Wow, that's great. I know I was out on your website to prepare, and I love the new Action Center. It was very user-friendly, and I definitely went down the rabbit hole well in there. So that was, it's a great tool that you guys have put together. So Claire, do you want to speak more about that and let our listeners know how they can use it and what it'll benefit?
Yeah. So on our website, and you can just Google the EveryLife Foundation Newborn Screening Action Center, and it should take you right to the home. So we have a lot of great resources on it. We obviously kind of delve in if you want to learn more about newborn screening. There's great information there. You can also look at, we have a map of the United States, and you can hover over your state and see what rare diseases your state is screening for and what rare diseases your state is not screening for. They're included in the RUSP. You can also join or sign up for the newsletters. So that allows you to sign up and receive action alerts relating to newborn screening and rare diseases in general. And there's also on our website, you can hit, I believe it's get involved, and you can go right to like Dylan said, sample letters and sample emails you can send to your representatives so that asking them to support legislation.
That's great. I love how easy you guys make it to get involved. When I was first starting out, I was always flustered with, what do you say? How do you say it? You know, does somebody really listen to this? And so to know that you have that template to sort of prime the pump and allow people to start their engagement there for advocating is, I think, just a wonderful tool. Tell me more about the newborn screening and where you want to see it developed to. I'm always curious to know why all 50 states don't have the same tests.
I can start first kind of why the states don't have the same ones. The disorders that newborns are screened for is set at the state level. So each state is different. Each state sets a different kind of number, and each state implements their screening program differently. So some do it through legislative avenue and some do it through administrative avenues. So it just differs by each state. And because of that, sometimes it takes longer to get things through legislative action than it does through administrative action. But with EveryLife, we're working to pass RUSP alignment legislation. So the RUSP is the Recommended Uniform Screening Panel, which is set at the federal level. It is the Secretary of Health and Human Services makes recommendations of disorders to include in the Recommended Uniform Screening Panel. And these are recommendations for disorders that newborns should be screened for. So currently there are 35 core conditions on the RUSP, and more are definitely in the works. So there'll be some added in the next couple of years. But as conditions are added to the RUSP, they are not necessarily added to the state newborn screening panels. So like I said, they have to go through legislative or administrative channels before they can add disorders. And so EveryLife, we're working to pass legislation in states that would RUSP alignment legislation. And so the idea is we can pass this legislation, and as disorders are added to the RUSP, the state will automatically add these disorders to their newborn screening panels. And so the newborn screening legislation obviously aligns states with the disorders that are in the RUSP, and it also implements a timeline with which the screening should begin, and also make sure that there are resources available for the states to fund these newborn screening panels and kind of the disorders that are added to it in the future. Last year, we added RUSP alignment legislation in three states. We passed it in three states. We passed it in Ohio, Arizona, and Georgia. And then previously, we'd also passed it in California and Florida. And we'll be looking to pass legislation in more states and upcoming in 2022. And so we definitely recommend that you sign up for our newsletter just so that you are up to date on kind of what states we're in and if there's anything you can do to contact your local legislators about our newborn screening.
Okay.
RUSP alignment legislation.
My son wasn't caught on newborn screening because he was 2 years too early for the tests that came out. Had he been born in 2001, his disease would have been caught. And so I fully see the value of newborn screening. And you said that the states need to have adequate funding to run the testing. Is that why some of the states don't run all 35 tests, because they just don't have the adequate resources in order to actually process the testing and then deliver the results back out?
I think the short answer is yes. That's definitely part of it. I don't want to say it's all about funding, because I think that doesn't quite look at the full big picture. A good example also why we do have a state-run program is because each state is going to be run a little differently. And so a big part of the newborn screening program is the follow-up services. And so if you're looking at, let's say, Rhode Island versus Montana, how you re-engage a family for a positive newborn screening test is going to vary greatly. And so that's why you're going to want, we understand why there needs to be state-run programs. With that being said, because of that, you're going to have state-specific issues on how to implement new conditions. And so while funding is definitely part of that, it's not the only issue. And so it's, how do you properly set up the care infrastructure? How do you properly set up the education materials? How do you ensure that the materials you're creating can meet the population of your state? No state population is the same. So you want to ensure the fact that the Alaska Newborn Screening Program is properly communicating to their community and to those who live within their state. And so that all takes time. And going back to the Rust Belt Alignment legislation, on average, it can take currently 5-6 years for a state to add a condition to the Rust to their state panel following the addition to the Rust. That's too long. But we do understand that it does take time. And so generally within the Rust Belt Alignment legislation, we advocate for a 2-3 year timeline, which is still longer than we would love it to be. We would love it to be a month. We would love it for once it's added to the Rust, you start screening immediately across the country. But we recognize that you have to implement those follow-up programs. You have to implement the new testing because it is not immediately, the state lab is not immediately ready. They have to learn the new test. They have to make sure they have enough staff, enough machines, enough room. There were instances where adding a new condition means that a state lab had to buy a new building because they're out of room. They didn't have enough machines left, and so they had to transfer buildings. And so we understand that those things come up. And so funding is a big part of that. Making sure you have the money to buy those new machines is a big part. But there are a lot of aspects that kind of go into, I think, looking at just the money, you kind of losing the forest from the trees there because it is a big part. But it's important to look at what that money is funding.
That's a great way to look at it, as far as that it is more than just funding. It is, when you say resources, a lot of people see dollar signs, but it really is implementing back out what those results mean and how it could impact the families and the community that it's reaching to. So I recognize what you're saying with that. How do you guys decide what new diagnosis to add to the RUSP? Like, what's your process on, we need to add 3 to 5 more screens because of X, Y, and Z? Like, what generates that thought process?
To be added to the RUSP is done through the Federal Advisory Committee. And so the Federal Advisory Committee, I refer to that as the Advisory Committee for Heritable Disorders in Newborns and Children. And so that sits within HRSA, which stands for the Health Resources and Services Administration. And that the Advisory Committee is made up of newborn screening experts. And they want to add as many conditions as possible. I would like to say that off the top because people will be critical of them at times. You're not adding enough. We're not adding quick enough. But with that being said, there are certain things that they are looking for. It can kind of come down to 3 areas. Can you properly identify the newborn? Can you properly treat the newborn? And what is the overall benefit? And so the first aspect is, can you properly identify the newborn? This really gets to the core idea of, in a general population, can you make sure that you're properly identifying those who have the condition and those who do not? So you want to make sure your false positive and false negative rates are low. In terms of, can you treat the condition? It's worth saying right off the bat, that does not mean an FDA-approved treatment. It just means, are there accepted treatment protocols? And so while, yes, FDA-approved treatment is one of those accepted protocols, for conditions that are metabolic in nature, is there medical foods that you can take to avoid the situation? It's really that kind of combination of, can you properly address the condition if you are diagnosing them? And then overall benefit. And so that looks at kind of the full public health system. Is the public health system ready to add the condition? Again, going back to that false positive, false negative rate, are you ensuring the fact that you are not missing people, not missing families, or telling too many families that they have this issue, then to go for confirmation testing and find out that they don't? And so that's really what they're looking at when adding a condition to the RUSP. And it's also worth noting that generally, when it goes through administrative measure at the states, these state newborn screening committees are also generally looking kind of the same qualifications.
Sure, that makes complete sense. So I have another question then. Why are we still working on these blood spot tests when genetic testing has just taken off into places we never imagined 10 years ago? Wouldn't it just be easier to just do genetic testing right away, or how do we justify doing the screening versus just using genetic testing as a screen?
So in the future, we'll see. I think it's a short answer. I think everybody generally is looking at this as like, this makes sense. Again, going back to the can you treat it aspect, if you're looking at whole genome sequencing, there's always that question of, should you be giving a diagnosis for a condition that you can't treat? That's an ethical conversation for a different day, but that is a part of the conversation. I would say currently, the research suggests that the blood spots are still better identifying these conditions than the whole genome sequencing. And so while moving forward, I think everybody can generally agree that somewhere in the next decade or so, genetic testing might surpass that. But at the moment, dried blood spots are still the best system, and they still are working the best to ensure that we are properly identifying newborns out of that general population. And I think that's important to note. It's not that these are asymptomatic newborns. And so you're not doing a specific test, like, we think they have this condition, so we're gonna test for it. it's we have no idea if you have anything. And we know the majority of newborns are going to come back with a negative newborn screening test. And so you need to be able to make sure that in a general population, you can identify the newborns. And as of right now, the dry blood spot and metabolic testing is still the best way to do that.
How many kids do you guys catch annually across the nation?
So the current estimation is approximately 1 in 300 newborns. Obviously, as we continue to add additional diseases to that, to the RUSP and to state panels, it's also important to note that would be if all 50 states were screening. So I imagine the number is probably a little lower than that. But based on prevalence counts and anticipated how many newborns should have that condition for each individual condition, when you add up all 35, it gets to approximately 1 in 300.
Wow, I did not realize it was that prevalent. That's amazing that you're finding that. You just said something that intrigued me. So not all 50 states are screening or have some screen in their system?
Yes. So that goes back to what Claire's talking about with the RUSP alignment. So all states screen for at least 31 conditions from the RUSP, but not all of them screen for all 35. I think right now 17 screen for all 35, but there are 33 states that do not. And so that's what I was talking about in terms of not every state is going to screen for every condition.
Got it. Okay. I thought you meant for a minute there that we had states that weren't doing any newborn screening.
No. Luckily, going back to the reauthorization with the original passage of the Newborn Screening Saves Lives Act in 2008, we are long past those days where you have some states screening for a bunch and some screening for three. Every state screens for at least 31 of the 35 RUSP conditions. And so that, I think sometimes with a newborn screening, we can get lost in the potential and being upset that we're not where we think we should be. I myself can be guilty of that from plenty of times. But we've come a long way in the last 20 years and that uniform aspect of all state screening for at least 31 of the conditions is definitely great. But we tend to be greedy. We want everybody to screen for everything. And I support that greed, but it's nice every now and then to take a step back and realize that there has been progress.
Yeah, there has been progress. And I'm with you on that. I think everybody should go for 35. It just makes sense to catch things when you can, especially if they're treatable, or just even having the knowledge to be on the lookout for the symptoms that are coming with a disease would just save so much heartache for so many people. And just that education piece is to start out right away with it is so important. So again, Claire, could you remind our listeners on how they can get in there and be budding advocates for this process and how they can jump in and get involved and really get the reauthorization passed in 2021, being that it's been sitting there since 2019.
Yeah, so they can visit our website, specifically the Every Life Newborn Screening Action Center. Again, if they Google it, they should be able to pull it right up and they can learn more. We have all kinds of resources available for them to learn more about newborn screening and about the Newborn Screening Reauthorization Act, as well as RUSP alignment. They can sign up for our newsletter and sign up to kind of receive alerts about newborn screening. We also have, they can go directly to the action alerts. We have some kind of templates for them to send letters and emails to their representatives, whether they're kind of at the federal level or at the state level. They can also follow us on social media at everylife.org. We try to keep that up to date. And so we'll kind of tweet a lot more too as we get closer to, as we start to work with RUSP alignment and reauthorization.
Oh, I didn't know you guys were out on social media. That's a great thing to know. And we'll definitely link that back through Mito Action so people can easily get to that information. And if anything, just to be in the know, I think it's important for people to understand that although sometimes it seems like science takes forever, especially in the rare disease community, that there are people behind the scenes just pushing and prodding and pulling and advocating to extents that I just don't think people are aware of. And I know Every Life just really has that persistence and that knowledge on the Hill where you guys are just so respected and you're definitely listened to and your recommendations are always, always heard. I'm from Minnesota. I'm lucky enough to have Senator Klobuchar, who's just a champion on all things health. And she's just so wonderful to work with. And when we send things to her office, we always get a response back. That's not just a canned response. So I feel like I'm kind of in the minority for the rest of the country. So I just want to encourage everybody to just follow these easy steps and start your engagement with your elected officials, because your voice does matter. And if we want to move rare disease along, this is one of the best ways to do it. And I always say with rare disease, and I think you would all agree, that we may be fragmented and have little pockets of patients, but together we are a big community and we have a large constituency if you put all the rare disease people together. And we need to harness that power and move things in the right direction. Would you guys not agree?
100% agree. And I kind of want to build off the point that you just made in terms of you feel that you're in the minority in terms of having a representative who you feel listens to you. I think for people in those situations as well as the opposite end of the spectrum, it's important to note that advocacy can take on many different forms. And so for somebody, let's say you're a great example, Senator Klobuchar, she is one of the chairs of the Rare Disease Congressional Caucus. She is a fantastic advocate for the rare disease community. But contacting her about the newborn screening reauthorization is still important because you can push a strong advocate to a more vocal advocate. You can push a vocal advocate to a screaming advocate. And on the flip side, if there's a senator or representative who you believe is not acting well enough, they need to hear from you. And that advocacy really does have an impact because representatives and senators do listen to their constituents. I promise you they do. And so conducting that outreach there's that spectrum of how much of an advocate is the senator representatives, and hearing from the constituents can always push them up a notch. And whether they are the chair of the Rare Disease Congressional Caucus or has never supported a rare disease bill previously, everyone can always move up a step. And so while we love Senator Klobuchar, it's a great example of somebody who there's always a benefit to reaching out. Thanking them for their work, please do thank them, because someone like Senator Klobuchar has been wonderful, but it never hurts to remind them of the issues because they are so very busy.
Yeah. And I always feel like her conversations of my constituency is still saying that this is a priority, and she can be saying that to her fellow senators across the country. And this really has to stay top of mind. We can't just let this get lost in the shuffle of the daily grind there. So I think it's important for everybody to just keep reaching out and to try reaching out. I think you guys just make it so easy to dip your toes into the world of advocacy. I can't stress it enough. It's how I started federally was through you. I've joined your Day on the Hill and a few other projects now through Every Life. And it's easy and it's fun. And you actually feel like you're part of the process instead of just being a passive sidelined, you know, just accepting what comes your way. You know, I always say try to get a seat at the table if you can.
Yeah, I definitely want to make sure I give a specific thank you to a program within the foundation, RDLA, or the Rare Disease Legislative Advocates. They're the ones who put on Rare Disease Week across America, which we've talked about. Also within our Action Center, we have an advocacy resources page that links to RDLA and all their policy primers and how-to kits. They are wonderful at their jobs. So it's always going to shout them out when I can, because they do a lot of those policy primers and a lot of those how-to guides. And they're the ones who make it really easy for you guys to kind of step in.
And Claire, there's like a what you guys call a one sheet or a one page, right, on the Action Center for people so they can just read quickly through. They don't have to read through the entire bill. You guys just have it like all summarized up so they know what they're asking for their senators to do.
Yeah, Dylan talked about the policy primers. And so they just are kind of quick one-sheeters that just break down bill or legislation really quick, just so you're not diving in deep, but just kind of getting what you need to understand.
Great. Well, I appreciate you guys coming on the podcast, and hopefully we can spur some activism there out there in the mitochondrial disease community. I know a lot of our FAOD parents who have experienced newborn screening and catching, as we like to call it, catching their kids before they fell. I know they're big advocates for this and have really asked us to jump in and be a louder voice. So here we go. So hopefully you guys will see more of us.
Great. Thanks so much for having us on today.
Thank you guys. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning into this week's episode of Energy in Action. Remember to give us a 5-star rating on your listening app. This helps to boost us up the charts and makes it easier for others to find us. And remember, you can find all of the information referenced either in the show notes or over at mitoaction.org. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.